Hello and welcome to episode 3 of The Deuce.
Where are the big 3?
I'm Bradley.
And I'm Jeremy.
And today we'll be talking about
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
That's correct. It's one of Jeremy's choices this time. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And go ahead.
Okay. So this actually is the kind of thing that we usually talk about here. When I was younger, I actually saw the sequel without seeing the original movie first. So this is one of those examples of, you know, how do sequels work and do they stand on their own?
Right. And I've seen the original more than the sequel. Like, I remember watching the original when I was younger. Fox 42 at 2 o'clock on a Saturday, we played over and over again. It was just one of those things. Yeah. Afternoon movie, and I just would love it and play it over and over and again. So it's one of those things where we're probably going to disagree on a couple things, because you saw the first one, or you saw the second one first, yeah, and I saw the first one first. So
yep. And, you know, I'm sure that's going to be the case. I've actually seen this one more than I have the first one,
which is unexcusable.
I didn't see the first one for years after I saw the second one. So, I mean, it's been, yeah, I think I've had
well past its prime.
Yeah. All right. So this movie opens up with some leather daddy and some sort of coat basically going on and on about how the future, you know, it's going to be under his rule now, and all the hippy dippy love and rock and roll is too much, and then they're going to be now in order from the chaos. They're now going to be structured, and he has troops who are
obeying
him. Are you
talking about the bad guy of the movie?
Yeah, well, that's what it opens with.
Well, no, it opens with, like, the it's the future. And yeah, it's the class that Rufus is.
Well, but they don't go there just yet. Oh, okay. Then it rolls to the future. Or then it rolls to
the
academy. Mm-hmm. That it's basically based off of the teachings of the Wild Stallions.
Of course.
Yes. That takes place in what, like 26 something or 25
like
something?
It's like 2791 or something like
that.
Yeah,
it's
93.
Way in the future, and they've mastered time travel, of
Correct.
Course. At the beginning, I mean, we see this, the academy, it's kind of a neon-clad utopia. Everybody's wearing, like, big foam. Like, everybody's wearing giant neon Uggs.
Right. Like, in the future, everyone looks like the Doodle Bops.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, they all look like the flight attendants from The Fifth Element.
Which is funny, because the bad guy, I said, has leftover costumes that look like The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But they come into the classroom, which is being run by Rufus, who is played by George Carlin. He's mm-hmm. kind of the one who teaches classes there, and who was a mentor to Bill and Ted and making sure things are happening the right way, mm-hmm. And sets them on their path. But now he's teaching new students, and he brings in the time traveling phone booth.
Right.
And out of it comes
TARDIS.
The TARDIS, if you will. It comes Edison, Bach, the guy from Faith No More.
Right.
Some future weird person, because they always do that in movies. They always name, I noticed this in an episode of Star Trek just recently, where they were like, it's this person and this person and this person. They always name like two or three
right.
people that we know. And then they're like, and Glorp Blox.
Right.
And that's who, and so Glorp Blox is there.
Glorp Blox.
And she was.
She's beautiful.
Yeah, she was a some future person who invented some musical gizmo. And
yeah.
Of course she does some weird pantomime arm thing, just so that we know she's
not,
weird and from the
not
future.
Not Steve Jobs.
No. Well, as they're working, then all of a sudden, there's an explosion at the door. And We see the same guy, the leather daddy from the beginning. he busts into the most excellent academy. We find out his name is Denomalos, Chuck Denomalos. And for those of you who aren't paying attention, so the writer?
The writer.
Ed Solomon.
The creator.
Yeah, it's the creator, Ed Solomon. And if you reverse that, it's Denomalos. So,
correct.
So Denomalos comes in. He monologues about how he was Rufus's teacher.
Now, the guy that played him actually did this movie on a bet.
Really?
I don't know if he lost the bet.
I'm thinking he lost the bet. He wasn't like, yes, I've won. Now I can be in Bill and Ted's
I'm in the Bogus Journey.
He basically monologues about how he'd rather be some sort of corporate shill, and he needs to be less love and more business and military control, and he's going to do this with his master plan, which involves these two people throw off these robes, and we see Bill and Ted.
Oh, man!
Whoa!
But then, totally bogus, dude.
But then what they do is they pull the rubber off of their heads, and you realize they are robot Bill and Ted. So not just robot
totally
Bill and
bogus.
Ted's, they are evil robot Bill
right,
and Ted's.
Right, they're evil. Keep that in mind, because that comes back.
Of course. So they get into the time-traveling phone booth, and they're going to go back.
And Rufus is all mad.
And so Rufus at is kind of, at this point, George Carlin's kind of sneaking around the back of the room.
Right, this ain't no Shining Time Station for George Carlin at this moment.
So he pulls out this electric guitar and throws it at the phone booth, and it like,
right.
It like wedges
just
into the
lands.
Top of it. Like, it must be sharp.
Oh, it's
but
all
like,
about it, the bass.
It wedges in there, and he pulls taut on the cord, and when the phone booth goes into the time stream, boom, he goes with them. Now, we cut to the present.
Of course.
So, we are in the present.
This movie came out in 1993, so the present is
the
about
present
1993.
The present is 1993.
No, actually, I think it was 1991.
Was it? Because it took place 5 years. Yeah, it was 91. Cause yeah. It basically took 5 years after the.
Pre-grunge, and not post-grunge.
Correct. It was like right on that cusp of where it was starting to head that direction. So we cut to the present, and we get to get reacquainted with Bill S. Preston Esquire, and Ted Theodore Logan.
Oh, Theodore Logan.
They reveal it's been 5 years, but they still suck.
Of course.
But they have to get good enough for the Battle of the Bands. Their teacher, Mrs. Woodrue, played by Pam Grier.
Pam Grier.
Yeah. She's going to give them a shot anyway at midnight, because by then most people aren't going to care and nobody's going to leave affecting all the other acts.
I think Foxy Brown at one time said, I'm just going to call her Foxy Brown. I'm sorry, Pam Grier. Anyway, I think she says, I pay you pretzels and cheese.
She played some. Which, and that might be accurate.
No, it's pretty accurate. I mean, with the Ruffles potato chips bags and the Doritos everywhere, I'm thinking they're like, whoa, Bill, they're going to pay us some pretzels and cheese? Amazing. Like, they're, like, excited about that.
Amazing? Whoa, it's excellent.
Whoa, it's totally excellent.
Sorry. Totally excellent. Most. They say most a lot.
Yeah.
Like Winona Ryder level of that's most excellent. The
Heathers in Heathers.
Yes.
Did she say that?
Yeah. Anyway.
So the Battle of the Bands.
So yeah, they're getting ready for that, and then she gives them a shot and says you have to get ready. And they're of course now their band is comprised of Wild Stallions is comprised of Bill and Ted and the Princesses. One is on keyboards and one is on drums, and they have gotten very good at playing in those 5 years, whereas Bill and Ted still suck, and actually, they become very well acclimated to modern day life as compared to Bill and Ted, who still are very much struggling.
Right.
So, So they throw a party, a birthday party for the princesses.
Because why wouldn't you? Well, by the way, when those princesses were princesses, they did not have, like, classes which taught them to play drum. I mean, you taught them to do this.
Well, you have some kind of drum. I mean, they pick stuff up. It's been 5 years, and they're not dumb. So.
Well, that's true.
Well, maybe they are yeah,
with Bill and
Ted,
Bill and Ted into, you know, into a phone booth through time.
You know, well, time traveling kind of overrides that.
I guess.
But the so they have these birthday parties celebrating their 521st birthdays. And we kind of go, a military colonel comes up and threatens Ted with going to military school. And then, of course, adds Bill on there as well. I thought they were out of school, so I'm not sure what the military school thing's all about. But
yeah, I don't quite get that either.
Like, it's not quite the same threat that it once was. But
every military person is like Needlemeyer from Animal House. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. They all remind me of that for some reason.
But also, and this is partially. Ted's dad is threatening him with this because Ted owes him money, and Ted just hasn't gotten his life together, so on and so forth. His dad's the cop, so he wants order in Ted's life. We see Missy mom. So she's divorced Bill's dad and marries Ted's dad in that running gag because she's, like, close to their age, yet she's... married these older guys who are parents of her classmates. So, Bill and Ted take the princesses aside and they propose with these little plastic heart-shaped rings.
Right. When they propose, it's very weird because he's like, "Excuse me, Ted, I gotta do something." He's like, "Excuse me, Bill." I'm like, I forgot how much these guys do so much together.
Yeah.
Even though they're like, don't pay attention to me, but it's like they drink Pepsi together, they write poems together,
yeah.
They propose to the girlfriends together.
True. It's true.
I'm like, Jesus. Well, oh.
And they, when they're reciting these proposals, they're basically the same thing, except one of them is talking about, like, aquatic animals and one's talking about land animals. I mean, like, I know that's kind of the joke, but the... they are. They're very much like, I don't know if they worked on them together or if they're just that like-minded or what. But
I don't know.
So, obviously, they've not quite thought all this out. But the princesses say, yes, they will, in fact, marry the guys.
Air guitar.
We flash to the phone booth coming down, and there's a running gag about the evil robot Bill and Ted trying to kill cats, and they just miss it with the phone booth. And again, they land at the Circle K, because there's always something afoot at the Circle K. they find out that Rufus is lost in time, so the guitar is broken off. He's not with it, so they don't know where he is. They assume he's just lost.
He's on a comedy tour.
Yeah, he's yelling about kids getting off his lawn. So the princesses, who, again, very well, much better acclimated to life in this century than Bill and Ted.
I was like, wait.
So they're going to take off. They have a car. Like, they not even a busted-ass van. It's like they have a VW convertible, like a VW Bug convertible.
Wait, why are they going off?
Because they live somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they don't live with them. They haven't even gotten with them because they're remaining chaste, is what they said. But then all of a sudden, they leave. And just as a reminder for those of you how jarring it is to think about, oh, yeah, there was a time we couldn't call each other very rapidly. like, instantly after the girls leave... they get a phone call from the princesses saying they're going into the desert and they don't want to get married and so on and so forth. And they're like, whoa, princesses, how did you call us so quickly?
And then
I realized, oh, yeah, there was a time when we couldn't do that. Like, now I was like, why is that weird? But now, I remember now.
Yeah. But also, the desert to be alone. You're just going to go to the desert.
Well, that's what they're saying here. But then it flashes back.
Yeah.
And it's actually the evil robot Bill and Ted.
Oh, dude.
Basically setting that up. So then evil robot Bill and Ted show up to real Bill and Ted's place, saying they are them from the future. And they need to go help the princesses, and they're going to make them better, and so on and so forth.
So it turns into a Parent Trap, like Haley Mills. Bunch of split screens, bunch of duplicate people.
No, their split screen person in this movie had to have a friggin' nervous breakdown. It was like, not only split screen, but then it was like, I'm sure it was, like, because they had to keep reversing the sides, and then they had to keep matching up, because you would see them walk forward, and there'd be a dude who was very clearly not Keanu Reeves.
With like I thought he was Asian at one point.
He was.
Okay.
He was.
Okay, I wasn't making
that
up.
That's not just you, man. That was legit. So they go with them, and as they're driving, they realize something is not going well. Because they're getting very mean. And they get him out of the van and they say, we're going to kill you. We're going to kill you. We're evil robot yous. And so
somehow they get excited about that and do their little air guitar thing.
Yeah, you know.
So I'm like, okay, you're going to kill me.
And again, after like the 800th time in this movie that they've said the word bogus, it's like fetch.
Right, they were trying to get people to say
quit
bogus.
Quit trying to make fetch happen, Gretchen. Like, I think that somebody trademarked the word bogus.
I actually said
it. I think we can make this work.
Like, at one time, like, Bill has the same catchphrase as Michelle from Full House. Like, you got it, dude. Like, I was like, okay. Did she get that from you, or?
They have the same press agent. The, you know, and there's actually one point right before this, too, where Bill, played by Alex Winters, says something is most non-heinous or something like that. And I go, what are you trying to say? I can't tell if you're trying to say something is heinous or it's not heinous. And, like, I got confused in all the double negatives. But the evil robot Bill and Ted's throw the real Bill and Ted's off a cliff while calling them some unsavory names.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's very, again, very jarring.
It's very homophobic.
They say the word fag multiple times throughout the movie. And it's just jarring because you forget how, like, it's just came out.
Yeah, I don't think that they would do that in the movie.
No, I think now when you say it, it's got some other kind of different connotation and punch with it when it happens.
Look at those bundle of sticks.
Correct. They always mean bundles of sticks now. I meant cigarettes, dude.
So they fall and die.
Yeah, so they realize they're dead. Like they fall and they're laying there. And all of a sudden they get up and they're kind of like painted, so they look pale. And
right,
like
I said, when you die in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, you look like a blue Smurf. Well, like a Smurf.
Yeah, basically, and everything's got this like real weird blue filter on it. Yeah. So they realize they're dead, and they see this very Ingmar Bergman death character played by William Sadler,
right,
like on the horizon, and then he just kind of appears closer to them.
Which, the whole scenes where we're going to talk about, where they are battling each other, are from a movie, The Seven Seal, which is funny that you mentioned that, but go ahead.
So, Death lets them know that they can challenge him to a contest, and if they win, they can go back, but if they lose, they have to stay for eternity. And that no one has ever won. So the brilliant tacticians that they are, instead of challenging Death, they give him a Melvin.
Which I thought that was a wedgie.
Yeah, I thought it was a wedgie also.
I've never heard of Melvin.
So I don't know if there's something different about a Melvin? Like, is there something special you have to do to make it a Melvin?
I don't know. Add water, because it's like Herman. Oh, that's Melville.
Melville. Never mind. That's sorry. Melville.
Sorry. Bad joke.
So they give him a Melvin. They say, your shoes are untied. And when he goes down to look, they run away. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he doesn't wear shoes. So that just makes it all the more special.
William Sadler's death is wonderful in this movie.
And he's so dry at the beginning. Yeah. But anyway, the ghost Bill and Ted see evil robot Bill and Ted planning to kill the princesses after the concert. So they know they have to do something, so they go to Ted Dad's police station to get help. they possess, first off, Bill's dad. Bill possesses his dad, and it's this guy trying to do a Keanu Reeves impression, basically.
Right, they're talking to all the policemen. Yeah. I actually said this is the strangest roll call scene from Hill Street Blues I've ever seen.
Bill decides he's going to possess the sergeant, who was the, you say he was the mayor?
He was the principal on Picket Fences. Principal that's Picket how Fences. I know.
And he was in, like, arachnophobia. I haven't seen, it's weird. Like, obviously, it's, you know, it's like they gave these older established actors this, like, hey, try to act like, you know, these youthful, almost like stoners, kind of like Bill and Ted. I haven't seen old people trying to unsuccessfully act that cool since The Last Man Standing with Tim Allen.
Oh.
So, of course, the cops don't believe them. So they realize it's not going to work. So they go to see Missy, Ted's stepmom, Bill's former stepmom,
who's doing some sort of seance,
some weird, out of the blue, she's into like hippie, like whatever, seancey stuff, and so into whatever spiritualism. So, Bill and Ted are able to reveal to themselves to ask for help, when they're doing that, but they think, well, and they're all saying people they want to meet, and they're calling forth these spirits and who they want to meet. And, of course, Missy wants to meet Ty Cobb,
right?
Which I don't know why she, you know, she must have a thing for racist baseball players.
Right. Maybe L.E. Cobb would be better. There's an Exorcist joke in there somewhere.
So they get confused when Bill and Ted are asking for help, thinking they're threatening Bill and Ted. So she starts going through these books and finds one about exorcising evil spirits, and she casts them out as spirits to hell, where they just fall through the void screaming.
Right.
And so you just see them falling from like the top of the screen to the bottom, and then it happens over and over.
Yeah, they just keep falling.
Now, this part, when I was a kid, I was in the theater just dying laughing. Like, this part made me laugh. Because, again, and we've talked about this, and you can see through other podcasts, too, I love absurdity and humor sometimes.
Right.
And it's
fun.
It's very absurd. And it's one of those where they keep falling, and then they scream a little bit less, and then they're falling and wondering, when's this going to happen?
The scene just went on too long.
Oh, it made me crack up.
It still makes you crack up.
It still does.
It still makes me cringe.
Well,
I said it just like John Travolta's career in the early 90s. They were falling for a long time.
So they end up in hell and see the devil, who looks like a pissed off cow with a cape. And they want to get his attention, so they do, like, the rock devil symbol thing with their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil starts reeling them in, and they ask if they can leave. And the devil says yes, and then drops them into their own personal hells.
Right, and this gets a little strange.
Yeah, so this is kind of this weird interlude. I always never remember it until I'm starting to watch the film.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, this part. So the first thing they do, they go through and they see all these rooms. They open one of them, and it's all, like, greenish-yellow on the inside. And it's obviously this weird abstract version of, like, a military academy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same colonel from earlier who starts yelling at them and tells them to do all these exercises, and he's going to, you know, keep them there and make them do stuff. And he tells them to drop and give me infinity, and it's making them do push-ups.
Okay.
And then finally they decide to run, and they escape him, and they realize it's their personal hells.
Oh, right, right.
So then they're like, well, let's split up.
Mm-hmm.
It might be easier. They can't do something to the both of us.
So Bill goes through this door.
So Ted right. first oh, goes Ted. Into, he opens it, and everything is pink.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's kind of giant looking, and he's a kid. And he starts eating all this candy.
Which basically they just needed a kid with long hair.
Yeah, it looks
any
like
kid.
Looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt getting ready to audition for Third Rock from the
okay,
Sun.
This is our third episode, and we've just made fun of Joseph Gordon-Levitt like three times.
In every episode?
I know, twice in Miss Congenial. Anyway.
So he's doing this, and then the Easter Bunny shows up.
Oh, freaky. Like, people are afraid of clowns. I think I'm afraid of Easter Bunnies.
Yeah.
That thing is creepy.
Easter bunnies are pretty creepy looking.
They are.
Well, this one in particular, he's all pink, and he has this kind of like cartoony voice. And he says that Ted is naughty for stealing his brother Deacon's candy. Deacon, who has disappeared, we don't see him anymore
right.
in this movie. But he stole Deacon's candy, and he's naughty for that. Then it cuts to Bill, who goes into a blue room,
mm-hmm.
and there's all these family members who grab him as a
right.
little kid and are taking him to kiss his gross and scary grandmother for
oh,
her birthday.
Oh, that was his grandma? I
yeah.
thought it was Where's the Beef Lady.
But he calls her, he goes, Granny
oh,
S.
Yeah.
Preston Esquire?
Right.
Which is ridiculous and awesome all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But the grandmother is also played by Alex Winters,
oh,
who plays
is he?
Yeah.
Did we decide
who
that
plays
he was?
Yeah, who okay. plays Bill. And because that guy, and we've talked about this too, throughout this entire thing, the way he mugs, the way he reacts.
Right. I
he
think he
is,
holds this movie.
Yeah, like he's the one who drives that a lot more, and I think that his expressions and things are a lot better. Keanu gets by on a lot of like his, whoa, I'm just going to be like tilting my head like a puppy dog.
I am.
And it's
also no kung fu.
Yeah, and it's Bill who drives a lot of like he makes like the face and kind of like scrunches his face up and
yeah
like he does good. Well, so like I would watch a horror movie with him as not the Lost Boys, but like I would watch a horror movie with Alex Winters as some sort of a character like that. I think he would be amazing.
Oh, okay.
But they all end up escaping these hells, and they're getting chased by the Easter Bunny, by Granny S. Preston Esquire, and by the Colonel. And the devil tells them to choose their eternity. And of course, you know, he drops the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Or drops calls the devil the F-word, which is always good, and Ted gets smacked away, and then Bill yells at him and gets smacked away.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're getting their asses kicked by the devil, they call Death to challenge him. And Death says, if I win, you go free.
Right.
If you lose, you spend eternity in hell.
Now, here's where most people who know the second Bill and Ted movie know these scenes.
Yes.
Like, this is probably the best couple scenes of
yeah,
the movie.
This is where we start getting into the meat and potatoes
right.
of the situation. So they challenge Death, and no golden fiddle contests or anything, even not the devil, nothing like that. It's a battleship. And you kind of see this, again, little...
Not electronic battleship.
Not electronic, the original. And it's just kind of this slow, very quiet, them guessing numbers, and the other person, you know, just going back, regular game of battleship. And they sink Death's battleship, and he says, he comes back and says, no, it has to be best 2 out of 3. And they kind of scoff at that, but they said, fine. So that they're playing Clue. And we couldn't quite figure out if they were each individually playing. Right. Because
you can't play Clue with two people.
Right, you can't play Clue with two people.
Because then you would know.
Yep. So.
So either both of them are going to hell or one of them is.
Right. Clue. Yeah. So they, Death guesses wrong. And loses, and so then he says it has to be best 3 of 5. So then he's playing, they're playing electric Super Bowl football.
Yeah, NFL Super Bowl football thing.
Yeah, and the little players are spinning out of control, and basically he loses, Death loses again, and then says best of 7. So the last thing is they're doing Twister, and they're kind of intertwined and everything, scene. And finally... Death falls and relents and gives them their freedom.
I think that's what gets me. Like, the Twister thing. That's really funny. I like that.
Yeah, that's it's a funny part of that.
Also said Death sounds like Vladimir Putin.
He wishes. No, Vladimir Putin wishes he sounded like William Sadler with a bad accent. So, Death finally lets them go. But they kind of, you know, are nice to him and kind of befriending him in a way, and so they ask Death, because they're trying to think, who could, how do we beat bad robot usses with good robot usses?
Duh, that's totally heinous.
Yeah, and so they decide they need good robot Bill and Ted's to fight the evil robot Bill and Ted's. So they ask Death to take them to somebody who can help them. So he takes them to heaven to find someone to help. They mug some people, and in disguise, they go and meet God. And they ask for the most brilliant inventor to help them. And God says, station.
Yes.
Now, it seems very odd if, you know, if you try to think back to some of the vernacular of the early 90s. Throughout the movie, other people from the future keep saying station, like it's another word for like cool or awesome or whatever.
That's true.
And I was like, I don't know, maybe they're just throwing a word in there that I'm supposed to know, or maybe I just was not cool, which I wasn't. But I'm thinking, oh, maybe there's something else. Well, God says station, and so sends them this little GPS disc thing. that they pick up to go find Station. And, of course, Death apologizes and is kind of embarrassed by Bill and Ted, which made me realize that the older I get, the more I sympathize with Death.
Which is strange.
Where I'm like, yeah. I'm really sorry about Bill and Ted, God. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry about the early 90s. The so in the meantime, while they're going on their hunt for Station in heaven, we cut to the evil robots Bill and Ted, who are just trashing everything and throwing their heads around the room.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they get a call and basically say, you know, yeah, the plan is on. We need to enact
the evil Bill and Ted don't do it for me. I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's a plot device, but I just don't.
Oh, no. And it's just like a nonsensical scene, too.
Yeah.
It cuts back to heaven again. And this whole time, I'm noticing in heaven, everybody's like wearing like hues of like, they're like wearing like white and lilac or lavender and like beige.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty boring.
Yeah.
And they're all wearing like what they wore in life, but these beigey neutral colors.
At least in hell you can play battleship.
Yeah, I know, right. So then they find Station, playing charades. Now, Station, basically, they are these little aliens. And, right. and they make a comment of, like, did you think that the most brilliant inventors in the universe would be from Earth?
Right, they're these big, gigantic... I said they look like Dark Crystal puppets. not Skeksis,
yeah, like
but the other one.
Yeah, like the wise elder ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do. They kind of look like used up Kathy Griffins. But I'm also wondering about, so... If they're aliens, first off, I always wondered, ooh, maybe they're like future humans. Like, maybe we evolve into that.
I hope not.
And that's what is there. But also, if they are aliens, why aren't there more of them in heaven?
Right.
Like, there's tons of humans, but shouldn't there be more aliens, too? Like, or are the aliens just really bad? And maybe they don't go to heaven, or they have a different part of heaven. Who knows? Or they congregate somewhere else. I don't know. But it's just, they're the only aliens you see throughout this thing.
Everyone knows E.T. went to hell.
Well, yeah. Now that they have the stations and death with them, they are able to go back to Earth. So they wake up, and of course they're like, Buzzard was pecking it. You know, Ted's head, right. Bill has a worm in his ear, and right. Dead type jokes. But Station's there, just standing, so I don't know why Bill and Ted just didn't do the same, but they're they're just chilling there, and then Death falls from the sky and gets up and is fine. But they decide they're going to go. So they come up with a plan. The steps of the plan are get cleaned up, warn the princesses,
right,
and then build good robot us's. So they don't do the first two things. Obviously, the first thing is go to the hardware store.
Yeah.
And it's, the next scene is just them at the hardware store. Meanwhile, the evil robot Bill and Ted's, who we've been missing so desperately, are kidnapping the princesses while knocking Missy out with their evil bad breath. And, like, they crash the car and, like, fly through the window and wreck the fireplace, get up, and then take the princesses.
Yeah.
And then we cut back to the hardware store. Yeah, it's really jarring. Like, the scene isn't very cohesive. So they go back to the shop or to the hardware store. And I do love this part. There's a guy smoking in an aisle. Death is pushing around the cart with Stations on it, and they're, like, picking gear out and putting it in. And Death goes by a guy who is smoking, and he says, "See you real soon."
Which is great.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest parts of the movie. And that guy is actually played by the director.
The director, yeah.
Yeah, a little cameo.
So they get all the stuff they need to make these, and they say, you know, we got to hurry up and make all this stuff. Yeah, I hope you guys are up to the task. And the Stations apparently figured,
well, they're making the robots. So they're making the good robots?
Well, before they do that, they figured, you know, this isn't awkward enough. Two of us are bizarre. So why don't we make a bunch of weird, like, dying cat noises and then run into each other and form a giant loogie on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
And then out of that forms a giant Kathy Griffin ogre.
Oh.
And with a much deeper voice then. And
I actually said that when the Stations merge together, they look like Mona from Who's the Boss?
You leave Catherine Hellman out of this.
Shout out to Catherine. Is she still alive, Catherine Hellman?
I don't know.
I don't know, but I love her.
Somebody check us on that. Is Catherine Hellman still alive?
I don't know, but I want to watch The Lady in Red. Remember? She was in that. Oh, anyway.
So they merge into this one giant, hideous, off-putting Catherine Hellman-like creature.
They build the good robots.
So they build these robots. Which look just awful.
Oh, God.
They look like...
Ted looks like Michael Jackson.
They look like hot garbage.
Oh,
and I guess when they're saying we need good robots, good robot versions of us. Maybe they should have specified great robot versions of us.
I think they meant morally good and not like...
Well, obviously, because these do not even look regular good.
Yeah, no.
The robots, they just look like they're living in pain. Like, they keep, like, making these mouth movements. It's like
wet garbage. Wet garbage.
Wet garbage.
So then they make it to the Battle of the Bands.
They make the Battle of the Bands, and of course they're playing. There's a band playing. Primus is playing. So first off, if they're going up against Primus, they're screwed. I love Primus. So you know, even if you don't share the same, you're going up against Primus. Come on. So they go up against Primus, or they get to their bit in the end. The bad robots take the stage, but real Bill and Ted challenge them. The good robot Bill and Ted's walk up and punch off bad robot Bill and Ted's heads.
At this point, this is the best battle of the band scene since the movie The Apple. Like, I love it.
Which was then later vanquished by School of Rock. But the... So then they punch the robots in the chest and they just like explode into shrapnel.
Yeah.
Which did not kill the front of the audience. So we're rest assured they're all fine. And then the princesses are saved by the stations who've separated at some point. Then Ed DiNomolo shows up, or Chuck DiNomolo shows up and takes charge, preparing to kill the Wild Stallions. So he takes over all the cameras in the world so the world can see them die. Mm-hmm. So now everybody's watching. All eyes are on the Wild Stallions. So there's this bit about time traveling. So this gimmick that shows up in so many things where they're like, and it showed up in other things. Remember to go back and put a sandbag above
him. All of a sudden there's a sandbag.
And so there's a sandbag, and it falls and knocks a gun out of his hand.
Oh, then there's like, a cage.
Oh, also remember
falls.
To go put a cage. And so there's a cage, which then drops on him. And then he says, aha, but I remember to do this key. And takes a key out and opens it and walks out. And he goes, and then I also will go in the future and make a gun appear again. It just appears in his hand.
At this point, there has been so much non-time travel, time travel-ness that it beats the movie Primer.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anytime you can get a good Primer reference in. So then he goes to shoot them and realize, oh, the gun's fake because only somebody is making it to the future and it's not going to be DiNomolo's. So it says, bang.
No, it says Wild Stallions.
It says Wild Stallions rule.
Get it right.
I'm sorry.
Get your time traveling right.
I've shamed myself. So then Death awkwardly Melvin's DiNomolo's. And so everybody's cheering, but then Pam Grier shows up and starts unzipping her costume, to reveal that Rufus was really underneath, and was the one who got them in the contest. So in case you're ever wondering, Pam Grier is really George Carlin.
And spoiler alert, that's the end of Jackie Brown too.
Okay, but so they've done all this cool stuff, but guess what? They still suck. So they realize they have to do something. So they go into time to learn how to play. So they go for 16 months, but come back instantly as far as we can see. So in that time, they got married, and they have kids, and Bill and Ted name their kids after each other.
Right.
So but Bill has little Ted, and Ted has little Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned to play and grew a bunch of facial hair.
Right. Well, I think I call them ZZ Flop and Keanu Jeeves.
Yeah, correct. That is correct. He's got a ridiculously long beard.
Oh, it's crazy.
Bill does. So they introduced the band. Now, nobody else from the band went and practiced with them. They just all of a sudden are as good as Bill and Ted.
Oh,
with
yeah,
everything.
That's true. I never thought of that.
So, like, Stations on the Bongos and the good robot Bill and Ted are just, like, doing the robot in the corner. And the princesses went in time, so they can play better now, too.
Even. Right, and Death is in the band.
Death
too?
Plays the bass, and not just any bass, the stand-up
the
bass.
The stand-up bass.
The cornerstone of any good rock rock band.
Right.
But he has this great line, which I have always loved.
Go ahead.
The one about, you might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later, you're going to dance with the Reaper.
Oh,
and then he like dances with his scythe
Sadler
a little bit.
Great
God, he's
in this
so
movie.
Amazing. So they finally play their magnum opus, God Gave Rock and Roll. And it's just, you see, because Denomalos, he's the one who got them on TV for everybody to see their message.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was supposed to happen like this.
Oh, it was supposed to happen this way.
Which I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I like when time travel stuff is like, see, you are part of the equation all along kind of moments. And that's really what this was. He was the one who got them where they needed to be on TV. And so that's really it. The credits start rolling, and we see how they spread the peace and love through, like, these letters or through these, like, newspaper articles and magazine covers that are flying by. Even stuff like when there was a rumor that they were going to break up, the Dow crashed, and when they said it was just a rumor, it went back. And, like, goofy stuff with Death
goofy stuff
and,
like
Missy marries Denomalos because, you know, that joke. And really, that's the end of it.
Yep.
Totally, you got deuced. We just dropped the deuce.
All right.
Most excellent.
So that's what we thought about the film, but let's hear what other people think about the film. So we found a couple of reviews, and Beer Drinking Dog gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, you got to love this one. When I was a kid, I totally loved Bill and Ted movies. The other night, Bogus Journey was on, and since it was at least 5 years since I last saw it, I decided to tune in. And I loved it all over again. This film is still funny after all these years. Excellent Adventure is better, but this one rocks just for the cheesy. And hey, this entire film is cheesy in a cool way. Plus, it features the coolest personalization of Death ever in a movie. Concluding, totally like non-bogus movie, dude. Way excellent station. Which is a great review. Wonderful. And then on the flip side, Martian Octer Crater 5 gives it a 3 out of 10 and says, this bogus journey never comes close to matching the wits and craziness of the excellent adventure these guys took in the first movie. This installment tries to veer away from its prequel to capture some new blood out of the joke, but it takes a wrong turn and journeys nowhere interesting or funny. The Grim Reaper is tossed into the mix for whatever reason. There's a ZZ Top impression hammered in for no reason. There's lights, smoke, mirror, noise, but nothing really creative or funny. Skip this bogus thing. That's kind of harsh.
That is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
That's heinous, dude.
Heinous.
So, you know, and I think, and the same thing happens with, like Wayne's World kind of stuff.
Right.
I think
this movie
being so reliant on, like, the language and the slang of the time.
Right.
It hurts it in a way. It was, I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Even
that,
the first one gets dated.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah.
It's still a good movie, but it's dated. With references and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like any comedy.
But Wayne's World's like that, too.
Right, I agree.
And for the time, it was totally topical. But if you like look now, you're kind of like, oh, my God, what did
we say? Totally, totally topical.
As if.
Okay.
Anyway.
Now we got our five questions.
So we're going to ask our five questions. So question number one. What did you think was the best part of this movie?
Two things. William Sadler, of course, his death is wonderful. But I like Alex Winter. I think that his comic timing is a little underrated. I think he has more lines than Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Like, he carries that. A lot of times when they do the air guitar, he actually looks at Keanu Reeves. I notice he looks at Keanu Reeves, and then that kind of tells Keanu Reeves, oh, yeah, I got to do the guitar thing.
Yeah. Well, and, like, and Keanu Reeves plays the vacant part of it very well. Like, the vacant expressions.
Right.
But it's... You can see, like, how Alex Winter is actually thinking.
Right. It's almost flat.
Yeah.
But with Alex, it's kind of like you see the wheels turning
which,
in his head.
Which is great. Like, if that's the personification of the character, I just think Alex Winters does it better.
Right.
Yeah, so no, I would agree with that. I think he's very underrated in this. I've appreciated him more as I've gotten older.
He now does documentaries.
He does do documentaries.
Like Fisher Stevens.
Yes.
Booyah.
Boom. Callbacks. You know, when I was a kid, I loved, for some reason, I loved that there was a real Bill and Ted, a good robot Bill and Ted, and an evil robot Bill and Ted. I loved that there was, like, multiple sets of Bill and Teds.
Uh-huh.
As I've gotten older, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really like a convoluted plot thing,
yeah.
Especially because they don't interact together all that much. Like, they're kind of separate. Like, if there was more of a scene where they were resolving all this stuff between the robots and the good one, like, I could see if they were more intertwined, mm-hmm. but, like, it's just kind of like, hey, we're here.
It's just there.
Whoa! And then they blow up.
Whoa,
and then, like,
yeah.
And then the good ones just do the robot. And so, you know, I enjoyed it in a way, but, like, I think if I had those robots, I think I would do it a different way.
Yeah.
Just to, like, they could have been better. For me, William Sadler.
Yeah, William Sadler.
I loved William Sadler as Death when I was a kid, and I love him now. And this role is so fun.
He's not known for comedy.
No.
And that's the thing.
But this is the role that put, to me, made me aware of him.
That's true.
And so, like, every time I've seen him in something since then, I've gone, oh, that's Death. Because that's what he was to me. That was the first thing I saw him in.
And that's why Wonder Falls was canceled.
Correct. Okay, let's move on. So the second question, reboot, continue, or cancel?
I'm fine. I'm fine just like these two movies.
Yeah.
I don't really... it's too dated to kind of reboot it. If you're going to reboot it, it'd be kind of weird. I mean, think about it. Metal really isn't that huge anymore nowadays.
Yeah.
There's no... I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, it's true. Like, I don't see where you go with it.
Yeah.
And really, like, even the future looks outdated.
Yeah.
It looks really awkward.
People are wearing foam stuff.
Yeah, like, foam, whatever. Although, it might be coming back in style. It's hard to, you know...
I don't know.
But you're right. I mean, a lot of that stuff is just not the same. And, it would be so hard
reboot
to
it as a cartoon. If, oh, wait, they did.
If I thought that came after the first one. I don't remember.
Know.
Anyway.
I think so.
But if they continued it, they would have to do it in a very particular way.
Yeah.
I would be okay with them continuing. As a matter of fact, I would love for them to continue it.
I just don't see how.
But it would be so hard to do well that I'm like, maybe you should just count your losses,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just say it was good.
Right.
And don't.
It's also
do that.
1991 was the last movie.
Yeah.
I mean.
Right. So I would love for them to continue, but more than likely cancel's probably the answer on that one. It just probably needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good there? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does this movie stand on its own?
You say yes. Don't you?
No.
I don't think it does it at all.
No. No. As a matter of fact, it barely stands as a sequel.
Really?
Yeah, like, I think, as much as I love this movie, it is not a good sequel to it.
It is not a good sequel to it.
It's just, like, it's so tenuously connected. Like, think of what the first one was doing. Yeah, it was their excellent adventure. I guess that's the thing. Like, we associate it with time travel.
Right.
But this one happened to be, their excellent adventure just happened to be through time. This was a bogus journey, which had them going through all these other supernatural realms and whatever. But, like, maybe it should have been more around time travel to make it. It just seems so. There's like a really small callback. Oh yeah, we also time travel link in it.
I feel like they didn't know what the second movie was going to be.
Right. Well, it reminds me of when you hear like the canceled plans of what Ghostbusters 3 was going to be like, where they would go to hell and do all this crazy stuff, and it seemed really awkward. That's what it reminds me of. Is that they were like, I don't know what to do here, so we got to do something.
Let's send him to hell.
But yeah, I think it barely stands as a sequel. Like, it's tenuously connected, and I love it for what it is, but, man, it is just...
So even though you saw it to begin with, you're saying...
No. No. I was confused as hell when I saw it.
Oh, I bet.
I still liked it, but I was confused.
The first one is
and it
such
just was not,
a...
It's not good with that. Like, once I saw the first one, I'm like, oh, I get it now. Now I get what the hell is happening.
Right.
Yeah. So, but would you watch the first one, or does this make you want to watch the first one?
No.
No, it doesn't make you want to watch the first one?
No. Plus, I've just seen it over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, if I want to watch it, this is not going to be the reason why I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it because I want to watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
This does not make me want to watch it.
It kind of makes me want to, though.
No.
It makes me want to because I think... The parts that I missed out on, like they have the time travel stuff, and now that, you know, if I hadn't seen the first one, I wouldn't know about that, and I'd be like, okay, that's just a weird
but
plot
I think
device.
That's because I've seen the first one so much.
Yeah. But now that I know that the time travel is such an important part in the first one, I'm just like, oh, I just want to go back and see that done right. And so they did it well. Actually, I thought they did it incredibly well in the first one because they had a lot of like the interlaced like, hey, we're going to go back in the future. I'm going to put this here and I'm going to get this. And the thing they called back to in here with Denomalos, which was really awkward, like now I have a key and now I have a gun that just appears in my hand for whatever reason. That was awkward here. There, I thought it was well done in the first movie. Okay, so last question. Sum this up in two words.
Cheesy. Extra cheesy. It's just cheese. It's a cheese ball movie. It's something that is just there. I don't like this movie. I'm flat out do not like this movie. The parts I do like are fine, but I can watch the clips that I like. It's I just like about maybe 15 minutes of it that where death is.
Yeah.
But cheesy, extra cheesy for me.
Yeah.
I don't like it. That's just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me explain this one. I think for my words are most excellent. And the reason...
No,
but listen to me.
Bogus is correct.
That's too many words.
I know.
So the reason those two words sum it up for me is for a lot of things. It has like this nostalgia that I love about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, just like most excellent, it's really outdated.
Yeah.
Like if somebody said that now, I would probably silently walk over to them and slap them in the face.
But
and
if I want that, I'll watch the first one.
Right. But it's very outdated, and that's painful. At the same time, it's got that great nostalgia feel. But also, like, I love the positivity of Bill and Ted throughout the whole thing. Like,
yeah, they're not bad characters.
Yeah, I love it because they are good characters. They're like good-hearted characters,
right?
Which and that's how they get peace across the world. Just telling people to be excellent to one another.
Right.
And
again,
so I
can watch the first movie for that.
So I think be excellent or most excellent sums it up in a bunch of ways because it means different things to me depending upon how I look at that.
So we're going to go with the end. How do we say this movie? What we like it or not?
I do like it. Because of a nostalgia thing for
right.
me.
Right, and I miss Napoleon from the first one.
Yes. the first one to me is so well put together.
Yeah, it's a classic.
And this one is just so chaotic, and it's so goofy, and I think the reason I do love it is because of nostalgia. If I had never seen this, and this was my first time seeing it, and maybe I wasn't even familiar with the first one, I would ask what the fuck was happening. Why do people like this? Like, I could see why people wouldn't get on board with this movie.
Well, folks, I think this is the first episode where we split on decision that I don't prefer the sequel, but you prefer the sequel for nostalgia purposes. So we're going to end probably on that note.
Yeah.
So you say watch it.
I definitely say give it a chance, watch it.
And I say just skip it and watch the first one.
Well, I say watch the first one too, but and then take this one with a grain of salt. So, but
yeah, so folks, you've been deuced. Look forward to our fourth episode, which is our which is our listener's choice, which listeners decided that we are going to drop Mission Impossible 2. So look forward to that one coming up soon. For now, the sequel is king.
Have a great one.